Good evening. We're calling to order the special regular City Council study session meeting of Wednesday, July 17th, 2013. Our first item is an executive session. The City Council will be adjourning to the executive session with legal counsel to discuss property disposition and potential litigation. The discussion time frame is 30 minutes. We should return by 7 o'clock. Thank you.
Okay.
Good evening. We're calling to order the special regular City Council study session meeting of Wednesday, July 17th, 2013. City Council has just returned from executive session. No actions were taken. We have present Council Members Haitopoulos, Ward, Blossom, Mayor Bonkowski, and Council Member Lester. Council Members Blair and Scales have excused absences. Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda? Mayor Bonkowski?
I'd like to add an item for council discussion 4B, and it is a discussion on easement.
So item 4B, discussion on easement. Are there others?
I move we accept the agenda as modified.
The agenda has been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Blossom. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Are there any conflict of interest to disclose? I have one. On item under staff intensive 3H, I'll be facilitating the meeting, but because the item is related to the Parks District, I will be recusing myself from the discussion. I'll facilitate, but will not engage in the discussion. My husband, Ryan Vansel, is the legal counsel for the Metropolitan Bainbridge Island Parks District. Okay, moving on. The first item we have is the third item is staff intensive. We have, I believe, Heather Beckman, welcome.
Hello.
and she is from the city, and she will be discussing the Waterfront Park City Dock community input. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, council members and members of the public, Mayor Bonkowski and City Manager Schultz. I'd like to tonight provide an update on the month of June and the community meetings that were held. I would like to discuss our current efforts to continue to engage the public and give you some of our next steps in the process. I'm not going to go into great details about any of our results tonight because there's a survey that's still open-ended. I'm just going to give you some highlights, and then I'd like to open up the floor for discussion of questions. But before I dive into any of that, I wanted to take a moment to commend you all, as I know there's a time and a place for everything, and I want to commend the council and the city manager for recognizing this, that the time is right for improvements to the park. The city is going through a lot of change, as it always has been and will continue, and we've seen a lot of improvements recently to the streetscape along Winslow. We have also seen the opening of our new Waypoint Park. We have seen the grand opening of the Museum of Art, and we will soon see improvements to our town and country. And while we look forward, I'd like to take just a moment to look back in the past of this piece of land. Looking back at the 1900s, it was used by the Squamish tribe for fishing. It supported the Hall's Brother Fishing Yards up until 1915. It provided naval housing. And now we have our tennis courts, our community center, playgrounds, and our tennis courts. So with your foresight, you've allocated this $1.85 million to the park. It was often referred to as the diamond in the rough, just waiting to be discovered. This was a common sentiment we've heard from the community in the last month. With the success that I'm hoping to present to you tonight, I wanted to say that this couldn't have been possible without support of Sustainable Bainbridge. They would have been so supportive along the way. As you know, we have limited resources and time right now, and they have been present with me on countless meetings. They've helped set up chairs, post signs around town, speak with interested community members. They've also helped front a bill for Dan Burden, that was our keynote speaker at our first meeting. So they've just been a huge support. And there's four members I wanted to recognize. I don't believe any of them are here, but maybe they're watching at home. And that is Jonathan Davis, Sally Moran, Mayor Del Gale, and Rob Smallwood. And this leads me to our meetings. We booked in our community meetings with the month of June on the first and the last of the month. And we also held a merchant meeting on the towards the end of the month on the 25th here in these chambers. Our outreach efforts, I feel they've been pretty successful. We did, as I mentioned, with the help of Sustainable Bainbridge, we posted flyers around town. We also worked with the Chamber of Commerce, who blasted out to their listserv, as did the Downtown Association. They invited me to their quarterly meeting to get some input from merchants. And I wanted to commend City Manager Schultz for allowing us to use Facebook for the first time in the city's history to get input, and I think it's been very successful thus far. Our first meeting, June 1st, was What Could It Be? And the idea of this meeting was to just be a visionary meeting. We wanted people to get any and all ideas out on the table. We didn't want to limit those ideas. As I mentioned, we had a guest speaker named Dan Burden. He's the founder of Walkable and Livable Community Institute. He is a world traveler, highly respected individual who has helped inspire great places. And I believe he has started this ball in positive motion as he led us with an hour presentation and a walking tour around the park. And we had, I'm happy to say, about 100 people at that first meeting. And if you were able to attend, the layout of the meeting was we had four areas of emphasis: the water, land, activities, and connectivity that the park should support. And depending on your level of interest, you would join that group and share with your members. The groups range between 5 and 10 members. You would share with them what you wanted to see in the water or the land. And then at the end of those breakout sessions, they lasted about 30 minutes, the results were shared with the entire room. And we did this twice, so you could choose your two top favorites. And after that, everyone was given an opportunity to place a red dot, which indicated what they were in most favor of. and we have tallied up those results, and those are available on our website. Our second meeting was our merchant meeting, which we invited the downtown business owners. We had a small turnout, but it was nice to hear their thoughts. We shared with them the results, and we encouraged them to continue participating with us throughout the process. Our third meeting on June 30th, which was themed, how should we design this? We've had all these great ideas, now where should we put them? And we started again with a walking tour, and for this meeting we invited people, user groups, to come and share with us how they use the park so we could all have an idea as we're creating space for these particular uses. So we had someone from the Waldorf School speak about how the children use the beach. They frequently visit the park multiple times each week, walk along the dock, play in the field. We had members from the Harbor Commission speak with us about their vision for the dock, how they want to see the dock expand and the uses they want to see it support into the future. The Parks District spoke about the events they're hosting with the movies in the park coming up in August and sailing club. We had a member from the Senior Center speak about how the Senior Center interacts with the park. And we had from the Rowing Club, we actually had a couple students from the high school, which was a really nice touch to hear their vision for a row house within the park. We had about 85 people that attended, and we also broke out into groups like we did at the first meeting, and we were fortunate enough to have architects facilitating in each group. It was really excellent, so it could help break down any barriers people might have if they weren't design enabled. So we had architects facilitate that meeting. So what were the results? I'll give you a couple highlights. So we heard a lot about people wanting the possibility of the park supporting water taxis, human-powered watercraft. They wanted improved accessibility to the beach. There's discussion about maybe a potential for a boathouse, picnic areas, improved view quarters along Winslow and to the water. There's discussion about the park connecting to our past, to Waypoint Park, Pritchard Park, Strawberry Park. There was a lot of interest in food and the ability to consume food in the park. So there's talks about restaurants and food trucks, an eco dock, which is a new term, supporting rowing, non-motorized concerts and games for children. So those are just a few of the things that we heard at that meeting. And these are just some of the architects and Sustainable Bainbridge. I just wanted to take a second to thank them again for helping us on June 30th. So what did we do with all these results? So we got hundreds and hundreds of ideas. We collected them. I said we made the survey available, the results available online. And then we took all those responses and formulated questions. So we have a survey. It was launched just on Friday. It was done by SurveyMonkey. We posted it on Facebook. We have some hard copies here tonight in the back of the room. If you haven't taken a survey, please take a moment. It closes on Monday the 12th, and we've had over 600 people I checked just before we came in tonight. So mm-hmm. It's like about 100 a day, which is pretty exciting. So again, I thank Facebook. I think it's had a lot to do with the success. And what's next? We sent out a RFQ at the end of June. Our close date was on Monday. We had 8 responses, and we're hoping to have our consultant selected at the very beginning of August. We'll be conducting interviews in the next few weeks. So that wraps up my presentation. If you have any questions, thank you.
Thank you. Council members, do you have any questions or comments? Councilmember Hytopoulos?
Well, I just want to thank you for this opportunity for us to hear, because I haven't been to these meetings, and it really helps to hear, to get a picture for how much process is happening, so that later on we're making decisions, we understand what it looked like, the public process. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
My compliments to Heather Beckman. She did great presentations and is doing a tremendous job in terms of shepherding this through. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
This is also a study session, so at this time, if there aren't any further council comments, we will open the floor. Are there citizens who wish to discuss or make comment? Would you please come up to the podium and give your name and address, and thank you for being here.
Hi, I'm Garrett Veely. I live on Sportsman Club Road. I've been a Bainbridge Islander for about 15 years. And I want to talk to you guys about the game of pétanque. A lot of our Islanders who play pétanque have come along here to just show themselves. You guys want to stand up, wave, do all that stuff.
Welcome, pétanque players.
We kind of came into the process late, so I wanted to make sure you know there were plenty of us here.
Okay.
So we're asking the council to consider building a pétanque court at the upper section of Waterfront Park, back away from the water by the senior center.
Mm-hmm.
The senior center's interested in that. I have a video here of some people playing pétanque, so you can visualize the game a little better. These are people playing in Seattle at the Seattle Pétanque Club, and then there'll be some from the Edmonds Pétanque Club. We'd like to, well, pétanque's getting very popular all over the U.S. We want to form a club here to play on Bainbridge Island, just as there are clubs in Edmonds and Seattle and Portland and Walla Walla and all around here. The game pétanque, as you see being played here, originated about a century ago in the south of France. It's typically played in public spaces on a compacted crushed rock surface. It doesn't require any special skill. It's like bocce or horseshoes, I think would be a common thing. It's very popular among seniors. Kids can play. You can learn to play in a few minutes. It's great for intergenerational play. It's a community building game, all ages, all social strata. People with limited mobility can play all together. You don't have to separate out into different groups. You can all play the same game together. So pétanque really builds community. People see the game being played, they ask about it, and are invited to join in, and soon they're playing. And hopefully they'll join our club. Boules don't cost much. They last for many years. Most people have extra boules, so people can come play with us. And I think, a pétanque court is very inexpensive. We're looking at flat, compressed rock like you would have on an ordinary path. And if we attract people in, you're going to see a lot of local interest benefit, particularly the people who show up are interested in wineries, restaurants. It would be useful to the senior center, obviously, French classes, school groups, clubs. It could be usable for fundraising events and all that. So up in Edmonds, they built a bunch of pétanque courts. Here you see them playing. You see all the sponsors that they had in an event on Sunday. They had 56 people who paid to join this event. They all brought their friends and to support them. And so we got up there and talked to them. I had Sue Barrington along and a member of the Senior Center board, and they got together with the pétanque club.
Okay, thank. We're going to need to kind of wrap up.
Okay. The Edmonds mayor, the mm-hmm. Edmonds city council, the port commissioner, and other port officials would like to invite you guys, the city council, out to Edmonds to play pétanque with them. They
okay.
want to show you what they've done out there. They know that's a lot to ask. They'd also want to involve the people that were involved in their waterfront project so that you guys can interact with them while you're playing this social game, learn about what went on there. The Senior Center has offered to transport you out there, and we hope that you guys, I've given you a copy of their offer
okay,
from the Edmonds
thank you.
People. I hope mm-hmm. you'll look at that and let us know if you'll take them up on it. That's for September 7th.
Excellent.
It's a wonderful offer, and thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to make a comment about the Waterfront Park community design and dock? Please come forward. And if you could state your name, and we're going to try to keep it within 3 minutes.
my name is Mark Lees, and I'm presently chair of the Harbour Commission. My only concern is at the moment, well, one of my main concerns is that the architects that have been asked to qualify for input and RQ requests for
qualifications.
The ones we met at the two workshops were all concerned about landscape and were not au fait with naval or dock issues. They they focused totally on the landscape, and in my groups, I didn't meet any who knew much about docks. So please take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Gloria Saylor, Agate Pass Road Northeast on Bainbridge. I just wanted to say that I attended the last session, and I want to endorse all the kudos, including to you, Debbie. You were there, and Anne was there, and Anne Blair. And it was just a great public process, and I think it showed like the best of the city allying with a nonprofit organization and really getting everybody involved. And for those of you who weren't there, I think to appreciate that it was a beautiful sunny day. By then we hadn't had our stretch of sunny days, and people were just jammed and really interested and excited and cross-talking. And what I love about it, and I'm so glad for the explanation of what Petanque was, because I was on the survey and I was like, what is that again? I don't know this word. But it really was about cross-generational. There were people from the senior center and then people from the Madrona School who talked about how important the wilds of the park were and, you know, the importance of not building too much, because then kids can really explore on their own and discover their own process. And I think that for people who come from the city, you know, this mix of Petanque or low sort of energy, low cost things to mix in with all the commercial things that we have to offer them and arts and things. So I think it offers a little special place on Bainbridge Island, and I agree that it's a diamond in the rough. So thank you for all the public process.
You're welcome. Thank you. Anyone else wish to comment? Welcome. If you can state your name and address.
My name is Cynthia Schick, and I'm a neighbor of Winslow here. I've been here 7 years, and I have
Welcome.
A little slide show. Do you have a clicker?
I'll click you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your presentation, Heather. I was so impressed and so sorry to miss any of the planning sessions. It looked like it was a ton of fun. But I did immediately click on the survey. I'm one of the 600, and I was possessed with an idea on Monday morning, and I decided that this place needs an amphitheater. So I've been a project manager for many years, and the best projects I had was when I was invited to create spaces where people come together. And I cannot stop imagining an amphitheater at Waterfront Park. So. But more on the nature of human scale, this is an example of a very small amphitheater that was built in a park in East Richmond, B.C. about 5 years ago. And it's obviously much more appropriately sized for Waterfront Park. This is another example of a small amphitheater that was done in the High Point neighborhood at the Commons Park that was built there, where I was project manager a few years ago. So, why do I love amphitheaters? I like them because they're outside and because they're simple and because they work for everybody. And I meant to thank you for introducing me to Petanque, too. So, like Petanque, they work for old people, young people, intergenerational. They're somewhat timeless. And I would love to see features at Waterfront Park that work for everybody, like Petanque, like amphitheaters, where we can have places that can do many jobs. And what better place than an amphitheater to let the public fill it up with whatever they want in their voices and their bodies and spirits and dances and games and poems and plays and movies. And I can envision that the amphitheater could take up any one of the places that are planning to be displaced that slope downhill and face the water. It's another way to engage people with the water who aren't necessarily water people. I like to be next to the water, but I'm not a water sports person. And just a quick little bit about how the construction works. It's you move some dirt and you get some rocks. It's pretty smart to get a stone artist who understands how the stones fit together. There's volunteers there in that photograph. Many volunteers worked in the East Richmond project to help bring it all together. There's lots of opportunities.
And could you work to, I'm sorry, to work to wrap it up? We're near that 3-minute time frame. Thank you.
As the community and ownership of the place. So please imagine the possibilities of an amphitheater.
Oh, fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And again, I'd like to thank Sustainable Bainbridge, the architects that volunteered, and certainly the city planner, Heather Beckman. And let's rock this survey and get over 1,000 if we're tracking for 600 right now. Heather, do we have the address for the folks at home? Would you like to... Is it on our Facebook page that they could go from there? And do we have a link on our city website?
Yes. Yes and yes. It's on the Facebook page, and we have a link from our city website to the survey. And there's one other thing I forgot to mention quickly, that Sustainable Bainbridge during the month of August would like to do an invasive weed removal. Hopefully we can get some participation in that to help kind of clean up the park before we move into the next stage, whatever that may be. So, yes, thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for coming, Petanque players, and great ideas. The next item, item 3B, ordinance number 2013-23 relating to the city budget process. And looks like we have our finance director, Ellen Shore. Welcome.
Good evening, council. Not nearly as visually interesting, but this is an ordinance on page one of your packet that relates to the city budget process. The attached ordinance will align our biennial budget process with the process outlined in the RCW for code cities which have a biennial budget. It repeals an existing chapter and replaces the existing language with language that's in compliance with the RCW.
Okay. Are there, are you ready for us to ask questions?
I am.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the council members? Councilmember Hytopoulos.
So just to understand, we've never adopted a mid-budget review. I mean,
when
we're replacing language. I'm just curious. It doesn't really matter, but I'm just surprised.
When the council adopted the ordinance going to the biennial budget, it doesn't appear that the mid-biennial review section of the process was actually included in the ordinance. So it is something that's missing, and we're proposing to add that so we can actually do the mid-biennial review.
Okay. Mayor Bunkowski.
I'm with the City Council forward ordinance number 2013-23 relating to the city's budget process with second reading on July 24th, 2013.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilmember Bunkowski, seconded by Councilmember Ward. First, are there any comments or questions from the audience? Seeing none, any further discussion from council members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you. The next item, the 2013 mid-year funding. We have Ellen, will you lead this as well?
Yes. I understand that you are looking for more information on 2013 financial performance, and I want to assure you that finance is working very hard to do exactly that, and we are planning to bring you information on the first meeting in August that will include information on revenue, information on expenditures, and then our very best forecast for the end of the year performance. Recently, I brought you information through the end of May. I don't have any additional information at that time, although I'd be happy to go back over the information from June if that would be helpful, information through May that we talked about in June. If you may remember that we discussed there's some good news on the revenue side and some underspending that we're seeing on the expenditure side. And we also have some significant unknowns that we are looking at, and we'll bring you more information about as soon as we have it, including the possible need for general fund support for SWIM and the Rockaway Beach reconstruction project. So if there's interest in the previous information, I'd be happy to go over that again, or if you have other questions I can answer, I'd be happy to take them.
Mayor Bunkowski?
I would be very supportive of waiting until August so we can get a better snapshot. With the amount of unknowns, and some of those unknowns are going to come to closure here pretty quick, and so I think we'll be in a much better position to make any kind of decision we want to make rather than do it two or three times. So I think the 1st of August, the first meeting in August, certainly I can support.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I have one. At that time, will the city be bringing forward recommendations for reprogramming of funds, and how can we make suggestions as well? If there are funds available that won't be spent this year, and after we've found out from you what exactly those dollar amounts are, will you be bringing recommendations, and can we send recommendations to you as well?
You're certainly always welcome to make suggestions to us. I'm not at this time planning to bring any recommendations for reprogramming forward. We are right now working on the 2014 budget, and so we are, to do the mid-biennial review as just discussed.
Okay. Councilmember Hytopoulos?
So that we were talking about the top, our topic was at the retreat.
That's correct.
So isn't that sort of a policy question that we would be addressing up here rather than talking to the finance director about this point? I'm not sure you were going to get more information, and then I would assume that we would talk as a body about mm-hmm. do we want to make requests, or how do we want to, what do we want a process to do what you're talking about? I just wanted to check in and make sure that I think that's something that we would put on the agenda for us to address.
So and couple that with the August 8th information.
Sure. I'm not suggesting go on the agenda, but if you want to talk about it, I think that would be a good idea.
Okay.
Place to do it.
Thank you. Any further questions, comments? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The next item is the update on the community meeting on Eagle Harbor Sewer Beach Main, the 30% design, and we have our Interim Public Works Director, John Cunningham. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Good evening, council members. First item that I have for you tonight is the update on the community meeting that we had this past Monday on the Eagle Harbor Sewer Beach Main project. Back in February, the staff had gone to a community meeting on that same project and made the commitment to the community that we'd go back at the point that the 30% design was complete and sort of give them an update of where we were and what we'd learned and that kind of thing. And so that was the purpose of the meeting on Monday. We held it out at the Wing Point Country Club, and we had 47 people, non-staff and non-consultants that were there. 47 community members were there. I think the meeting actually went pretty well. It was a pretty positive meeting. There were a number of questions that as we move forward to the 60%, 90%, and ultimately the final design that we'll be looking at and addressing as we move forward. One of the comments that at least I heard on more than one occasion is the community would like to see us do a bit better job of communicating with them in terms of where the project is and what some of the issues we're dealing with are. So we've made a commitment to them that we'll do that as we go forward, and I think that'll make for ultimately a better project in the end. What I'd like to do tonight is run through just a few slides and kind of both refresh the council's memory and give you some additional new information that's come out as part of the 30% design work that's been done. So tonight the agenda will be, I'll introduce the project team members. Some are here and some aren't. We'll go through a quick kind of history of the project, why we're doing it, and some of the decisions that have been made to date. Project overview, we'll talk about the project schedule from this point forward. We'll talk about where we think the project costs are at this point in time based on the 30% design and how those compare with the funding that's available for the project. And then there'll be an opportunity for questions and answers after that. So staff or the project team that's here tonight. Larry Ward, our project manager from the city staff, is not here tonight. He actually had surgery on his shoulder today to repair a rotator cuff injury that he has. So he was under the knife today. Chris Hammer is also not here here tonight. Chris was down in Olympia all afternoon working with DOT on some permitting issues related to the Rockaway Beach project. So so he's been kind of out of town doing that. From the consultant team, Laura Kamarik is here from Corolo. She's the overall project manager for the consultant team. From Roth Hill, Eric Waligorski is here. Eric will be doing a little bit of this presentation. He's the design manager for the actual design piece of the project. And then Pete Lawson with ESA, another sub-consultant of, on the project, is here. And Pete will be doing talking with you a little bit about the permitting and where the permitting is at this point in time, what some of the challenges with the permitting are going to be going forward, et cetera. So a little project history. As you know, the Winslow service area is served by the city's wastewater treatment plant, which is the located in the little purple location that you see there. The little red dots that you see on that particular slide are the force mains that we're dealing with for replacement. Here's another picture of those. The red one is the 12-inch that comes from the Highway 305 pump station and delivers sewage to the treatment plant for treating. The yellow one is the one that comes from Wing Point, and again, that's the influent to the treatment plant for treatment. And that's a 6-inch force main, both of those along the beach. And then the third one that we're dealing with is the actual effluent line that, that takes the treated sewage out to Puget Sound, again, currently located on the beach. So in the past, kind of what brought this project to a head is there have been a number of failures along the pipeline over the course of time. And the biggest one being in 2010 timeframe, when 400,000 gallons of sewage was spilled into Puget Sound. So the council commissioned a study to look at the beach mains. That study found that those beach mains were deteriorating and in need of replacement. So based on that, the council authorized the hiring of a consultant to begin the process of looking at the best way to replace those. And ultimately moving to 30% design, which is where we're at this point in time. As the team went through, they looked at a number of alternatives for both, actually all three mains, replacing all three of the force mains. Each section had both a what we would call an upland route as a possibility, and also replacing them basically in their existing condition along the beach. So that's just a quick look at a couple of the options for the force main that comes from the 305 pump station to the treatment plant. Another alternative that was looked at for that one. And then the alternatives that were looked at for the Wing Point force main replacement. In October of 2012, the council provided direction and authorization to the staff to proceed with 30% design of replacement of the existing lines along basically their existing route along the beach. And so that's been the focus of the 30% design effort to date. That decision was based on the fact that that's the least likely to be the least costly replacement alternative. We're able to use existing easements, and for the most part, and we'll talk a little bit about that, we do need some construction permits and construction easements outside of the permanent easement is there in order to do the construction work. And there's a couple, three locations where we actually need new permanent easements in order to do the construction. It's been a repair and replacement focus on the project. Although I will say one of the things that that will be done going forward. Corolo Engineers is also the consulting firm that's been selected and is doing the update of the general sewer plan. And so they'll be kind of marrying those two efforts together, looking at the capacity of particularly the effluent line and to see if that one needs to be upsized from a 16-inch to a 20-inch line. So that'll be a part of the way those two projects will marry together, as well as they'll be taking a look at the treatment plant in terms of its capacity and how that fits in with the sizing of that particular effluent line. The beach mains require substantially less right-of-way improvements, obviously, than going in existing road right-of-way, and much less neighborhood disturbance in the overall picture than going into right-of-way. Project overview, the 30% design looked at several different components. We did a topographical survey of the area. It's looked at the environmental permitting and has actually gotten a number of the permits pretty well ready to submit. That'll be a long process to get the permits that are required for the project. Biological assessment, critical areas and cultural resources evaluation, geotechnical exploration. We looked at a number of different trenchless technologies for doing the replacement, and Eric will talk a little bit about that. Looked at easements and the construction permitting that's going to be required to do the project, and then of course got the plans and sort of the contract documents to a 30% stage. Basically, what 30% means is it's more of an alignment kind of analysis and study and design. So we haven't done a lot of the elevation work and that kind of thing about how deep the pipe might be buried. The buoyancy calculations that might be needed in order to keep the pipe from floating and those kind of things. So it's basically taking a look at what the best alignment is and where it should be placed, et cetera. With that, I think Eric's up and he'll talk a little bit about the design and where the design is at.
Thank you very much for having me here to talk about the design. When we started the 30% design, our goal is to keep the cost down for the city, to be the most cost-effective solution while replacing the existing system. As you can see, for the Highway 305 force main, we ended up with a design of approximately 3,400 feet of 12-inch HDPE pipe. HDPE stands for high-density polyethylene pipe. It's a plastic polymer pipe that will not deteriorate in the corrosive soils of the beach. For the Wing Point force main, we ended up with just under 3,900 feet of 6-inch HDPE pipe, and then the effluent force main, approximately 3,700 feet of 16-inch HDPE pipe. Again, those pipe sizes will be confirmed through the general sewer plan. Some of the geotechnical explorations revealed some of the considerations and constructability issues that we need to take into account as we move forward through 60, 90, and final design. Obviously, with construction in the beach, we're going to have tidal influence and high groundwater. As John mentioned, we're going to have a need for doing buoyancy calculations to make sure that the pipe stays in the ground, whether it be with just the cover of the soil or if we have to put in mechanical anchors. Again, dewatering, trench stabilization are going to be issues that need to be identified and dealt with during the design. Based on the amount of flowing sand that was identified during the geotechnical explorations. As John mentioned, we took a look at several trenchless construction possibilities for this, the replacement of these pipelines, in an attempt to minimize impact to critical areas. The three trenchless methods we specifically looked at were pipe bursting, slip lining, and horizontal directional drilling. Pipe bursting is where you bypass the flow in the existing lines, so they are inactive, and then you actually burst that line and pull in a new line through the existing. Slip lining is similar, where you, without bursting, you stick in a smaller diameter pipe, but again, you have to bypass the existing flows. Both of those would require installing pipelines along the beach as a bypass, and thus creating quite a bit of disturbance in those critical areas anyway. Horizontal directional drilling is a process where you actually drill the pipe in, you do a pilot tube, and then you ream a hole open. It uses a fluid called bentonite for keeping the hole open, and one of the issues with horizontal directional drilling can be that bentonite actually surfacing and getting into the Puget Sound. and our trenchless sub-consultant believed that that was highly likely in this type of situation with the depth of the sand. In short, ultimately, trenchless construction methods were not deemed feasible for this project, and that the least impact would actually be just open trenching the project, going through, installing these lines, specifically on the east side, the 6 and the 16 at the same time in one trench, and only have one impact going through there. So the construction activities will impact a total of 45 parcels. As John mentioned, we're in an attempt to install this line. We attempted to stick it within the existing easement in almost all locations, and we were actually lucky enough to be able to do that with our current proposed alignment. The existing pipeline did not go right down the center of the existing easement. This allowed us to offset the proposed line and keep it within the easement, except for three parcels, one along the what would be the east side of the wastewater treatment plant down to the beach. We would be requesting an easement from the parks, Metro Parks, and then along their frontage as well, a second easement from Metro Parks. And then we'd actually only have one private parcel that we'd be requesting an easement from. And this is so that we could have enough room for maintenance in the future. In addition to that, we would be looking to request temporary construction permits from approximately 42 parcels. This is so that we can give the contractor as much space as they require to actually construct the line. These temporary construction permits would be either centered or offset from the existing permit and be no more than 30 feet wide, at least at this point. These temporary construction permits are just that, temporary. Once they are done with construction, they are eliminated and no longer impact the property owner. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Pete Lawson, who will talk about permitting and environmental issues.
Hello, thank you for having us here today. I am going to very briefly talk about some of the environmental elements associated with the project, including a rundown on some of the permits we're going to get to need, as well as some of the environmental issues, and also talk about some of the cultural resources, archaeological work that we performed. So this project will need a variety of federal, state, and local permits. Federal permits include Army Corps of Engineers permit for work below the high tide line, Endangered Species Act consultation. I'll talk a little bit about that later. National Historic Preservation Act compliance. There's also a variety of state permits needed, including permits from the Department of Ecology, DNR. An important one here that's going to sort of drive the project schedule is the hydraulic project approval from WDFW, which will have some pretty stringent timing restrictions associated with it for work within the ordinary high water. The work window is about 6 weeks, and I think John will talk a little bit more when he gets into the schedule. And then, of course, we need some permits from Bainbridge Island, including a shoreline permit, a critical areas review, and clearing and grading permit. So because this project needs a core permit, we need to comply with Section 7 of the Endangered Species Act. So in order to do that, we've already prepared a biological assessment that addresses that list of species, including fish species and marine mammals. And our conclusions were that due to the project timing and the minimization and avoidance measures that we've implemented, that the project will not significantly affect those endangered species. As far as some of the sensitive areas within the project area, there's four wetlands, including a large freshwater wetland that Holly Creek flows through. There's, of course, a shoreline, which has known distribution of forage fish, which are what salmon eat. The good news is that our impacts are fairly minimal. We have no permanent impacts and pretty small caliber temporary impacts. There's no wetland impact, just about 1,500 square feet of buffer impact, which we can mitigate for on-site by restoring it. And then lastly, we conducted some cultural resources evaluations. These include looking in the geotechnical pits. We also did a number of shovel probes in other areas and in wetlands, and no cultural resources were identified during these investigations. The other thing is that we documented the Hull Brothers Shipyard site, which is just west of the ferry terminal, as an archaeological site, but it's recommended as not eligible for the National Register of Historic Places. And the overall cultural determination was that there were no historic properties affected by this project. So with that, I'll turn it back over to John to talk about next steps.
Okay. Actually, before I get into the next steps, I would like to mention that in addition to the community members who were at the presentation community meeting on Monday, we had Councilmember Lester was there and Councilmember Ward was there, and we had a couple of UAC members, Utility Advisory Committee members there also. So thank you for coming. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
In terms of the project schedule, there's really about three pretty critical areas that we'll be concentrating on and putting a lot of effort in toward making sure that we meet these deadlines here. Easements, acquisition, and the acquisition of the temporary construction permits or temporary construction easements will be very, very critical. Obviously, the project cannot go forward unless we have those, so we'll be working on those basically the rest of this year, trying to secure all of those by the end of 2013, so we've got those. The permit approval will probably take between 6 and 9 months to get all the permits that were mentioned, so that work will start basically immediately and go forward from here. And then the fish window was talked about. That was the six-week sort of window that construction on the beach can be done. So basically what we'll need to do is get the project ready to bid, and the contract, if we want to do it in 2014, the contract awarded sometime early to mid-June so that the contractor is all geared up and ready to go when the window opens on July 16th and can get in, get the work done, and get out by the close of the window. All of these are critical if we're going to make a 2014 construction, which is what our goal is at this point. Next step, in order to meet the 2014 construction, in August, we'll be back before you with the professional services agreement, seeking your approval for that to go from the 30% design to the 100% design, final construction documents, etc. Also, as I mentioned, in August, we'll begin to work on the easement acquisition and the temporary construction permit acquisition with the goal of completing that by the end of 2013. Once the professional service agreement is approved, the final design will commence, and the goal is to have that completed by February of 2014. Between August of 2013 and June of 2014, we'll be working to acquire all of the regulatory permits that are needed. May of 2014, we'll be coming back to you at that point in time with another professional services agreement request for approval for services during construction on the project. And then June to October will be the actual construction of the project. In terms of overall cost, based on the 30% design, this is the cost to complete, the estimated cost to complete at this point in time. I will point out that the construction cost is based on the 30% design. The rest of the costs are based on industry standard percentages of that construction cost. So we're already talking about ways to reduce some of those by the city staff doing the acquisition of a lot of the easements. So some of those line items that you see in there are likely to go down just because city staff will be doing a good portion of that work. And that does include things like the inspection on the project. We're talking about having city staff do that in order to reduce the cost of the project. So, and again, all of these costs are based on design and construction in the 2013-2014 window. Project funding status, the 2013 adopted budget and the 2014 endorsed budget has a total of $4.6 million in it appropriated for this project as compared to the $4.3 million project estimate that you saw on the previous slide. Funding sources, $4.3 million of that is coming from Public Works Trust Fund loans, and about a third of a million is coming from the city's match for those loans, and that's coming out of the city sewer fund. And at this point, I'm open for questions, or we're open for questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Ward?
I don't have a question, but I just wanted to compliment you, John, and your engineer, Larry Ward. I attended the meeting, and Larry did an excellent job on presenting the project, and I really appreciated your good listening skills and in interacting with the Homeowners Association there. So that's the sort of thing I really like to see.
Thank you very much. And Larry did do a very, very nice job of making a presentation, and I think we're all pretty proud of what he did. Yeah. So, and obviously, if you don't listen to the community, you're not going to end up with a project that they're going to be supportive of, and you're not going to address the concerns that they have. So I think that's one of the things that we really want to do, you know, particularly going forward from here. As I said, we did hear. Some comment that maybe we hadn't done that as well as we should have in the past, and so we're ready to make amends for that as we go forward.
Mayor Bunkowski?
I've got two quick questions. First is, what's the schedule for the sewer plan to be complete? You had indicated that there were some issues with respect to the design that was going to answer, so I'm just curious, roughly,
That portion of the sewer plant update will be completed this fall.
Okay.
Yeah. The actual completion date of the plan, because there's other elements of the plan that will need to be done, is next year. So.
Okay. Second question is there was talk at one time in Olympia when they were going through all their budget machinations that the Public Works Trust Fund would be hit. The assumption is that that's where the money's coming from. Is there any concern?
No, or I guess I should say yes and no. Unfortunately, the Public Works Trust Fund program was hit, and the money going forward into the next biennium was swept for other things.
Mm-hmm.
But the fortunate piece is the money from past bienniums was left alone, and so the money that the city has on loan for this project is still there and available for us to take advantage of. But the bad thing is we already have that committed. Yes, it's already
saying.
Committed, and all the agreements are in place and commitments are in place. We just won't have an opportunity to do that again for any projects in the next couple of years.
Okay. Thank you.
And I had just a couple. With regards to the citizen discussion comments, were there any takeaways that you'll need to get back to people about? Were there, or were all the questions answered at that meeting? Were there any things you needed to respond?
Yeah, I think probably some of the biggest ones have to do with the area where we're doing the construction closest to the Wing Point lift station, and I'll try to quickly go back. There's an area there where the beach actually sort of juts out into the harbor and goes further out into the harbor than it does elsewhere. And those folks along that area are particularly concerned about the impact of the construction on their project, because at least the way it's currently designed, so it's this area right down in here, right down towards the tip of the Wing Point. And the current design, the 30% design, basically has the line going sort of across the middle, if you will, of that particular where it juts out. And so a number of the property owners there are concerned about restoration. Obviously, that impacts them perhaps more than it does somebody that's right on the beach. So they have made a suggestion that instead of doing this, that we look at maybe coming out and around the point. And so we'll be taking a look at that and seeing if that's feasible from a construction standpoint, how much additional construction cost it might add or time it might add. There are some benefits to it, because restoration would certainly be a whole lot easier than the other way. That I think is probably the biggest one in terms of what we're needing to get back to folks. That's probably the biggest area.
Thank you. And I take it that this project is on our project website section?
Yes, it is, yeah.
So if there are any responses, that you could put all that information up there, and people can go to the website, look up the Beach Mains project, and get information.
Absolutely,
there.
Yeah. And if people are interested, there's a place on the website where they can sign up for the listserv, so whenever we send anything out, they would automatically get it if they're signed up for the listserv on the project. So they'd get notices of upcoming meetings or in any of that kind of thing.
And one final, I think I heard this at the meeting, was the consideration for potential sea level change. Was that going to be factored into the design as well with
I think that was really focused on the Wing Point lift station, which is sort of located down in this area. It's kind of represented by the little green box there. That's not exactly specifically where it's at, but it's right down in that area. And that question really was in regard to the potential flooding of that lift station. So it's not really a part of this project to do that, but I think it is something that we want to look at. It could be solved relatively easily by adding, you know, another foot or two onto the top of the lift station. Mm-hmm. That happens to be what's called a submersible station, so it's buried in the ground, and we could raise that, the sort of the opening, the hatch, by adding another ring around it, and that would take care of that. So I think a good time to look at that, and in fact, that's one of the things that the General Sewer Plan will also look at, is all of our lift stations in terms of do they need repair work, do they need to be replaced, are they the right size, do they need to be upsized, et cetera. And so there may be something coming out of that in terms of the life of that lift station. Mm-hmm. And so it may be that as we look at that, we want to program in our capital facilities plan upgrading that particular pump station based on the outcome of the General Sewer Plan.
Thank you. Mayor Bunkowski?
One more question. I came from a community in Southern California that was susceptible to earthquakes, and also in a community that was a beach community, and so it was a combination of liquefaction and earthquakes. And as a result, over 20 years that I was down there, the building standards changed dramatically.
Yeah.
Do we have those kinds of concerns on our books and from a design standpoint today?
I'm going to put Eric on the spot on this as kind of the chief designer.
That's just a question of curiosity.
It's something that we definitely consider as we design in sand, and that's one of the advantages of the pipe that we've chosen. The HDPE pipe is a fused pipe, so it's 100% restrained, and it's also very flexible, so that in an earthquake, as ground movements occur, this pipe can flex along with those movements and be protected. So okay. It's definitely something we consider.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and thank you for being here to answer questions. We appreciate that. Are there any community questions or comments? Okay, thank you. The next item is item E3E, Fort Ward Reconstruction and Shoulder Widening Project. And you're up again, sir.
Yeah, I think you're going to get tired of seeing my face and hearing my voice before this evening's over. As the Deputy Mayor mentioned, this one is the Fort Ward Reconstruction and Shoulder Widening Project Contract Award. Request for the Council to move this forward to your next meeting on the consent agenda for the contract award. This project is in the 2013 budget, with an appropriation of $990,000 for the project. The funding for it is $121,000 coming from the street fund, $13,000 coming from the stormwater fund, and a surface transportation grant of $856,000. The project itself is on Fort Ward Hill, and it consists of 10-foot reconstructing the current roadway, providing for two 10-foot lanes, 5-foot widened paved shoulders on both sides of the roadway from Bolero Drive to Sunny Hill Circle. There'll be some guardrail that's installed, some rockeries that are installed, and some storm drainage as some of the other improvements that will be done. The first phase of the reconstruction of Fort Ward Hill was completed in 2008, and that went from Country Club Road to Bolero Drive. Bids for this particular phase were opened on July 16th, yesterday. Four bids were received, and the low bid of $692,981.84 was received from Primo Construction, and the engineer's estimate was $780,000. So we're about $90,000 under the engineer's estimate with the low bid. And the staff's recommendation is that the council accept the low bid and move this forward to next week's meeting for award of the contract to Primo on their consent agenda.
Thank you. Councilmember Mayor Bunkowski.
The with a budget of $990,000, is there more to follow after the $692,000?
No, there's not.
So that at that point in time, then we will be returning part of the grant. Is that
yes.
The way that that's
yeah.
The way that works.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because there is a match to that, and so you can only use so much of it up to your match. Yeah. So.
And there was a council received email from a citizen asking how we make the determination, what part is swim and what part is street. Is there a formula that we use, or how is that done?
I actually am not able to answer that question tonight, but
okay.
It's something I'd be happy to look at and see.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Super. Thank you.
Councilmember Hytopoulos.
So when is the project estimated to be done?
It'll be done this year. So it'll be done before the rainy season gets here this year.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Councilmember Ward?
I'm going to make the motion.
Okay, and then we'll
you
have...
Do you want to do public comment?
Are there any comments from... I actually have a couple questions. So before you make a motion, there's a couple more questions, I think. So I just wanted to highlight, although it's not named here, that there are bike lanes included in this.
Correct. Yeah, the 5 foot wide shoulder is wide enough to qualify as a bike lane.
Excellent. Yeah. Great. And I think that following Councilmember Hytopoulos's question regarding when are we going to this project occur, there are certainly neighbors in that area that are wanting to know time frame, how you're going to do traffic control and things like that. So how will we be getting that information out? Will that be something on a website? Will we have a listserv for people to know that, you know, they might have delays coming in and out of that area?
Yeah, we do have that, and quite frankly, I think we should contact them, you know, sort of directly and let them know the projects once it's been awarded. And once we've got the construction schedule from the contractor, we'll have more specific dates about when they're going to be doing what kind of work, and we can get in touch with folks then and be pretty pro. We'll try to be pretty proactive about how we communicate with them.
Excellent. Any other comments or questions? Councilmember Ward?
I move that the City Council forward the contract award with Primo Construction for the Fort Ward Hill Reconstruction and Shoulder Widening Project Phase 2 in the amount of $692,981.84 to the July 24th consent agenda.
Second.
So it's been moved by Councilmember Ward and seconded by Mayor Bunkowski. We'll open up for discussion. Councilmember Hytopoulos.
I just have to say I'm very thrilled as a South Ward representative to see this, because this is mm-hmm. one of the most dangerous situations affecting the most people on the island, and it's been weighing on us for a long time. So I'm thrilled that before I leave that this is actually happening.
Oh,
so
great.
Thank you to everybody that made it happen.
I'll let staff know. Thank you.
And I want to echo and also add compliments to our public works staff for your persistence. This was an item that had been put on a contingency list, and on KRCC Transpol, they gratefully moved our project forward and put it in a priority, and very excited to see this move forward. So thank you. With that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you. The next item is item F, Sunrise Drive Slide Repair Contract Award. Hello again.
Hello again. Well, I'm a little disappointed to bring this one to you because the last couple contract awards that that we brought before you, we've been lucky enough to be substantially under the engineer's estimate. We didn't do that on this one, but it's a relatively small project, so overall we're still substantially under. The Sunrise Drive project is for repair of a small slide that occurred along Sunrise Rise Drive. This project, we bid it under the limited public works process, which allows us to do a sort of a little bit less formal bidding process. We don't have to advertise for bids. We can go off the small works, what's called the small works roster, and pick contractors off of that to bid the project for us. We had a couple of independent consultants provide us with some estimates for the project. One of those was for about $30,000. The other one was what we ended up going with as the engineer's estimate of $34,050. Unfortunately, like I said, the low bidder bid was $56,872.15. Low bidder is sea level bulkhead bidders. We've looked at the bids. We've looked at the qualifications of the contractor, and it's our recommendation that the council award the contract to Sea Level in the amount of their low bid at your next council meeting on your consent agenda.
Thank you, council members. Any questions, comments? Mayor Bunkowski.
I move the city council forward the contract award with Sea Level Bulkhead Builders for the Sunrise Drive Slide Repair Project in the amount of $56,872.15 to the July 8, 24th consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved by Mayor Bunkowski, seconded by Councilmember Ward. Before we vote, are there any comments or questions from the community? Okay, seeing none. Any further discussion, council members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries unanimously. The next item is the Puget Sound Regional Council Transportation Alternatives Program Grant Opportunity. Thank you.
Okay. This is a request to forward to your next meeting authorization for staff to apply for a Transportation Alternatives Program, or TAP, program grant. This is a new program that's replacing some previous grant programs. The call for projects came out at the beginning of this week. We have until the end of August to put together our application for submittal to Puget Sound Regional Council. And the project that we'd like to submit for this is kind of a continuation of a project that the staff will be working on this year and constructing next year, which is non-motorized improvements. This year's and next year's project is from the ferry dock up to Winslow Way on Olympic, and then this would take it from on SR-305 from Winslow Way up to Vineyard. And so that's the project that we'd like to get authorization from the council to apply for. And I'd be happy to answer additional questions on that. It's a non-motorized separated trail that would be constructed should we be successful with getting the grant.
Mayor Bunkowski.
Just curious why we stopped at Vineyard and not tried to go all the way to High School Road.
Mainly because of the cost. I think that's the big issue. Now we could, what we could do, if the council's interested, we could potentially try to apply in two separate segments. My fear would be if we applied in one segment that they might look at that and we might not get either one. If we apply in two segments, then maybe we get both of them or one of them.
This is an item that was brought up at the Transpol, and it sounded like the projects get rated first, not in terms of dollars, but actually get rated in terms of the quality of the project. And then if it's one of the top projects, they then look at the dollars and they do some adjusting of the dollars. So if we had a project that was feasible, I mean, that's really what we're talking about, it sounds to me like the project would actually have more legs if it went all the high school road, because the real pinch point is after Vineyard, not before Vineyard.
Correct. Yes, that's very true.
So my sense is that it would certainly be worthwhile to do that as an alternative. You can always cut it back.
Absolutely.
But if we don't start now for that second piece, and I understand there's a cost issue, but I think there's, what was there, $15 or $19 million?
$17
million.
$17. Right in the middle.
Yeah. Councilmember Hytopoulos?
So it's $1 million to get to Vineyard Lane?
Correct.
If I think that what you need to explain, there is a underpass that potentially is a large ticket item.
Right. Oh, there's an underpass involved.
Yeah, part of the concept is to have the non-motorized facilities along the SR 305, and then also to have more of a local kind of connector that would go under 305 in a tunnel around the Wyatt Street area. And so that would connect across, because that's a long block from Winslow to high school. Sure. So the concept is to have a tunnel under 305 to allow people to go east to west without having to cross the street or without having to go all the way to high school or all the way to Winslow.
So what sort of, do you have some sense at all of what the, I mean, because I agree with Steve, if from a regional perspective, it's more interesting to get people coming over on the boat on bikes up to the next real place they need to get, which is High School Road. Are we talking about just another million since there's not an overpass, or are we talking about more?
Yeah, I think you're talking that or more.
Or more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For
the. But, I mean, the thing is, I mean, the reality is this is a project that is of interest to the whole county and
right.
the region.
Yeah. Especially
so.
The.
And from, we can get a lot of support.
Yeah.
Mayor Bunkowski.
I'm sorry. And I agree, and I think we can get a lot of support from other entities because of the popularity of bicycle travel, both commuters as well as tourism. So I think there's an awful lot of advantage to get it all the way to high school. Because after high school, it's a pretty good trail.
It's also economic development if we're thinking about day trippers and overnighters on bicycles from Seattle. So I would love, I mean, I don't know what we're asking for, how much, but I think it would be great if there's any way to do what that they're talking about, which is to be proposing at least, as you said, two parts to tease them with that, to try to just get the one, but let's put in front of them the whole distance if we can.
Thank you. Councilmember Ward?
I would add a comment that since I live in that area, I see a lot of my neighbors, and I don't do it because I'm not fast enough, that the trail ends kind of in that vicinity, and then they kind of look both ways and sprint across 305, and it's an accident waiting to happen. So a pedestrian, a way for pedestrians to safely get across 305 at that point, I think, is a pretty big safety issue.
Yeah, and that was the intent of the tunnel. I think the tunnel's going to be a challenge just because you have to go under a state highway and things like that. So it's going to be a bit of a challenge, but, we're up for a challenge.
So we did finally get the criteria. I think that came out finally.
Monday,
we had been waiting for that Monday of this week.
This past Monday, yes.
And if I remember correctly, there was discussion about collaboration being high on the list. So certainly if we can, as Councilmember Hytopoulos and Mayor Bunkowski intimated, that this is a project that is going beyond Bainbridge Island in terms of how its positive impact. So certainly looking to our neighbors, City of Poulsbo, the Suquamish Tribe, Kitsap County, our biking, certainly Squeaky Wheels and the various West Sound biking. And I'd even say the folks on the other side, Cascade Bicycle Alliance, that sponsors Chili Hilly. I think we can get many letters of support for this project, and it would be to our benefit to do so.
And Kitsap Transit.
And Kitsap Transit, yes.
Sure, yeah.
Yep. So thank you. It's a very exciting project.
So I think I heard a majority of the council would would like us to go for the whole enchilada here and go from Winslow Way to high school. Okay?
I'm seeing okay. Heads nod. Yes, sir.
Great.
Are there comments, questions from the community? Seeing none, do we have a motion? Mayor Bunkowski?
I move the City Council authorize public works staff to move forward with a transportation alternatives program grant application with an estimated city match.
City match will probably be more than that now.
Then I'm just going to strike that out. I'm going to start over again. I move the City Council authorize public works staff to move forward with a transportation alternative program grant application for the Sound to Olympics Trail project and to commit to fund the project during the 2013 budget cycle if the grant application is successful at the July 24th, 2013 meeting.
Second.
It's been moved by Mayor Bunkowski, seconded by Councilmember Ward. Any further discussion? I would just like to thank this council. I brought this earlier version to you a couple years ago and was disheartened, but they were being very prudent, and we were watching every penny at the time. So it's very exciting to see this move forward, and thank you. With that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries unanimously.
Great. Thank you very much.
The next item is item 3H, update on the Vincent Road off-leash park considerations. And as I mentioned in the beginning of the meeting, I will facilitate the discussion, but I will not actually be adding to it because I'm recusing myself. My husband Ryan Vansel is legal counsel for the Parks Department. Parks District. Excuse me, they're not under the city. Big faux pas on my part. With that, beginning,
okay.
You have the floor again.
Thank you. This item is really a request of the council to get input from you as to whether or not you want staff to continue to pursue this particular issue and work with the Parks District in terms of bringing it to fruition. The city's been approached by the Parks District with the idea of leasing a part of the city's Vincent Road property, which is the old landfill property and the property where the transfer station is located today, leasing a part of that property for an off-leash park facility. Since that request came in, staff has done a little bit of checking into the background of it and what it might take to make it happen. There are a number of issues that would need to be resolved. None of them are insurmountable, but it does take working with ecology because the land, since it was a landfill, it's got a closure agreement on it. And there are certain commitments that need to be made about monitoring it and the type of uses that are on it. And based on the type of uses, the different maintenance and operations things you need to put in place based on the use. Kitsap Health has some concerns because they're the one that actually does some of the monitoring of the compliance for that closure agreement. There's some permitting through the city, the Planning and Community Development Department. There's some permitting that's required that the district would need to go through. Public Works, O&M, we do have some concerns that we need to address because we do have our stormwater decant facility on the site, and so we'd want to make sure that it was the off-leash facility was constructed in a manner that would allow us to still operate that. And then legal, obviously, we'd want to put together whatever lease agreement we have in a manner that reduced whatever risk and liability we could on the city's part. So kind of with that, the request is to just get some direction from you as to whether or not you, since this was not a part of our 2013 work plan, whether or not you'd like staff to pursue this with the district.
Councilmember Ward.
I'm along with Council Member Blossom and Blair, who isn't here this evening, have been participating for the last several months with a group from the Parks District discussing this and other options. And I see this particular park is one step in the right direction. There needs to be several facilities like this, I think, to fulfill a need in our community for people to get their dogs out and safely exercise them. I do think at some point we should have a public hearing on this and provide the public an opportunity to provide input on this use of this land.
I think that's actually a requirement of the permitting process
that they'll need to go through. That would be covered there. But yeah. I think if there's not, if one of these potential barriers you mentioned isn't easily surmountable, I think this is an excellent use of that facility and one step in the right direction in terms of providing off-leash dog areas.
Thank you. Mayor Bunkowski?
With the different steps that you talked about, having to go through and evaluate this, that, and the other thing, if the end item use was not a dog park but a walking park, would the same number, you'd have to go through the same number of steps. So what we're doing doesn't sound like it is restricted to its end use, but to use it in a park-like setting of any sort, we would have to do that.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay,
yeah.
So I think, that then, I think, allows us to go. I would certainly support this, and if it turns out that through the public comment period that a better use, comes about, mm-hmm. and the Parks District has a new or different vision, what we've done is in support of that as well. So I don't think it restricts the end item use, and so I can certainly support.
Yeah, I think we could definitely, as part of the process of working with particularly ecology and the Kitsap Health Department, we could couch it in broad enough terms so that if the council's desire is to give the park district as much flexibility as they can, we could make that broad enough so that ecology would look at any number of different uses and come back and say, if it's an off-leash park, it's this. If it's some other use, it's this and that. And then with that, the district and again, of course, with the public comment and that kind of thing, the district could decide what they wanted to do.
Thank you. Councilmember Haitopoulos.
I just need to understand more about, we've received comment, and actually, Charles Schmidt is still here, so hopefully we'll hear from him since he was involved in the process of the cleanup and everything. But he's raised issues in emails that I'd like some more information on, and that is is it correct, am I understanding correctly, that this is similar to a sub-area planning kind of requirement, that there was an agreement that there would be a process to determine the best use by the community for this?
Okay.
Well,
I'm not sure of that. That obviously is something.
Because it sounds like that's what we're kind of going around is, are we going to accomplish it by starting off with the premise of a dog park, and then if during comment citizens raise those other ideas, we'd explore them. I need to understand if an agreement is written in the comp plan or in our files, that if there's been an agreement made with the community in the past that the way this process was going to happen is there would be a process through which the purpose would be determined, then I don't agree that we start with a premise. I don't think that's the same thing. So it sounds like maybe our planning director could answer it.
Welcome. Kathy Cook, our planning director.
I don't have my comp plan with me, but I believe what Mr. Schmidt's referring to is there's a comp plan policy that talks about a planning process for that site, a kind of a public planning process with some specific guidelines, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the specifics.
So I have the comp plan open, and I couldn't find an open space section. I just wanted to look at the section he referred. Is there actually an open space element, or is it under land use? I would just like to know what the governing rules, the policies are.
Would you like to place something on the overhead?
Mm-hmm.
So it's OS 3.0.
Councilmember Haitopoulos.
So the way I feel about this is similar to the way I feel about the sub-area planning for the neighborhood service centers. When we've made a promise that this is the way it's going to happen, it's a very different announcement to the public that we are inviting you to propose. This is the one opportunity to propose how this community wants to use that parcel, versus we're having a public process on a dog park. I mean, are we going to tack on? But if you don't like that, come and tell us, and we'll go a whole different direction. I think those are very different public outreaches. It may be that nobody has a better idea and everybody's happy and it's real easy, but I think, you know, it looks to me like what we've told the community we're going to do is open it up for suggestions. And I don't think we really can blame the public for not having come forward before the Park District came forward, because who knew this was an opportunity was there. We didn't give the opportunity.
Okay. So this was put forward as next steps. So council, is their recommendation for the next steps? And I'm looking, Mayor Bunkowski.
I still think it's worthwhile. If the Parks District is interested in a dog park, I'm not opposed to that. But what that really says is the site is available for community use if we go through a number of steps that need to be taken so that we can evaluate what kind of community use you can use. And there's a big difference between, you know, like what the kind of park that we had, Waypoint Park, and a community pea patch. You're probably not going to do a community pea patch in an area where you have to cover it and put in, you know. So I think it's important for us to understand that, and to the degree that these are the steps that we have to go through in order to get to the place where we can have a dialogue with the public per the comprehensive plan, I think it's still the right thing for us to proceed and do.
Okay, Councilmember.
Yeah. Excuse me. I was just going to mention that, I mean, I think that the next steps really are to carry the discussions with the Park District further, and, you know, things like I've mentioned and that we've discovered so far would certainly be a part of that discussion. This could certainly and should be a part of that, and ultimately, if there is an interlocal agreement that comes back to the council for ratification or a lease agreement or whatever it is, this type of language could be in there as a part of that agreement. In other words, in order to do whatever it is you do there, you've got to go through this kind of a process before you can do that. So that's one way to handle that.
Okay, Councilmember Haitopoulos.
Well, that has narrowed the purpose down entirely to a dog park. So I mean, if we go negotiate an ILA to do a dog park and then say, and they have to go through. All that's doing is just asking for public process on what the dog park looks like. This is a piece of city land, and a lot of community effort was put into ensuring it was cleaned up, and there was a promise made to explore options. And it's just not. I mean, actually, you can go forward with negotiation with the Park District is even more restrictive than to say for us to continue to explore it here. I hope we're going to listen to the community. On this right now, if we could. I'd like to
okay.
hear.
Councilmember Blossom.
So I agree with Kirsten. I wasn't aware of this when we were discussing this in the committee, but if our comp plan says we're going to go through this process, I think we need to go through it.
Okay. And any other comments? We can open the floor to the community at this time. Thank you. So if you'd like to speak, please come to the podium, and we'll have a 3-minute comment period for you. Welcome. And if you could give your name and address.
Sure. Charles Schmidt. I'm speaking for the Association of Famous Communities. We worked on an ecology grant for about 4 years to actually do reclamation, take all that stuff that was down there instead of just covering it, digging it all up. And I sent some pictures of what a job that was. And I think, actually, I'm glad that all of a sudden people are thinking about what to do with this property, because it's been sitting for a long time. Not being a dog owner, but having gone to Parks District's meetings on off-leash, I think it's, you'll probably have an open meeting, and probably the majority of people there will think a good idea is to have off-leash. But I think if you read this, you should at least have one that would be open to all ideas. And then after all ideas are there, I mean, my feeling is, and I've talked to some of other ABC members, that this is a good use for that property. At the same time, just having off-leash people there, dog owners there, I mean, we still have to think about wildlife, we have to think about neighbors, traffic, it was mentioned actually in here. So it's not just a matter of how you design it from a public works standpoint, but how you design it from a community point of view. And also the fact if there are any trails, and we have wildlife corridors. So as you know, my big feeling is bring citizens together, you get good ideas. And I think that's possible through this comp plan amendment and not holding it up too much. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to comment or ask questions? Seeing none, Mayor Bukowski.
I still have a concern, and that is we invite the public in to this kind of a process, and then we find out, we say, okay, we're real excited about this particular idea of its use, and then we find out by going through ecology and the other steps that it can't be used for that because it's still an active site or the monitoring isn't there or whatever. I think there are some steps that the city needs to go through first to make sure that any of the typical uses can be supported by the property before we go and engage the community to come in and give us all their great ideas. And that's the concern that I have about, you know, having the community in here when we don't know what the state real state of the property is.
Councilmember Hytopoulos?
I guess I'd want to know, perhaps from the interim public works director, can we ask broad enough questions that we can get some very broad answers? Because I wouldn't want us to go through a process where there was a, you know, an outcome, expected outcome. But how broad can we ask the questions with regards to uses? Can we get a response, or would we be duplicating efforts if we need to go back again with our particular use?
I think rather than ask broad questions, mm-hmm. we'd want to ask pretty specific questions, but in a broad range of potential uses. And so we certainly can do that and have those discussions with ecology, you know, about, like was mentioned, typical park kind of uses and how those might be accepted or not acceptable to ecology and to the health district, et cetera. So, yeah, I think it'd be more specific questions, but rather than just focusing on an off-leash park, it would be focusing on the broader range of possibilities.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Ward?
Well, that certainly seems like a very wise next step. I mean, I would hate to set up a public meeting and get people's input on a whole variety of things that, you know, 90% of them may prove to be impossible. Mm-hmm. So I think we do need to ask those questions first and then engage with the public on based on the response we get. So I think that sounds like a reasonable way to proceed.
Thank you. Councilmember Hytopoulos?
I guess just one last thing. I mean, because what I'm imagining is just a you know, one meeting to just pull in ideas, no promises, just ideas. And the reason I would suggest maybe we do that and then give that and then have the top 10 ideas or whatever, have them ranked like they often are, like we've heard about the waterfront park, and have that idea list go with our representatives to each of these agencies to kind of run through with the ideas, because that's the whole point of a public process is we don't know what ideas someone might have. that we just haven't thought of.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do it. Let's explain to everyone it's very preliminary, and we'll review the whether these are feasible and then go forward. And I agree with Charles. I think we'll hear from a lot of people who want a dog park, and that'll be just fine, as long as we just carry out our promises to the community.
Excellent. Do you feel like you have good guidance here for the next steps?
Yeah, I do. I think one of the things that we may need to do as staff, given the last comment, is kind of think about, okay, and maybe we even sit down with the park district and think about, okay, how do we have that sort of initial no promises meeting to get lots of input about what those range of uses might be?
So I don't...
Oh, excuse me, Councilmember Hytopoulos.
This is the city's process at this point, not the park's process. We can get to the park in an ILA if that's where it goes, but am I missing something? I mean, this is our property, and we need to reach out to our constituents and find out the broadest sense of what they want. And it may very well come down to park district and dog park, but I'd like this to be just the city asking its citizens the preliminary question.
Okay, councilmembers. Looking. Mayor Bunkowski?
I just have a question for Carrie. Is it your view then that should be something in a council meeting or set up like we did with a waterfront park kind of a thing? I mean, what's your sense of how to come to that next step? I'm all for pushing forward and, you know, making that property useful to the community, which is where I'm pushing. And so what's your view of the best way to get there?
Well, I think
Councilmember Hytopoulos.
I'd want to defer to Doug and staff, but I don't think it needs to be elaborate. I think a more of an open house situation, like a one-hour open house, that's going to obviously take resources, but just maybe a one-hour open house here one evening to just pull in ideas and chat and maybe put some diagrams up that would be helpful to the public, and just kind of a free-flowing conversation. I think it's actually pretty restrictive to do public comment here, and then I just think that an elaborate thing would be more than we need. So that's what I'd recommend if that works.
I did see we had someone join us who was also on the off-leash park. We are running a bit ahead of our agenda. I'm in charge, so we're moving quickly. At this point, council is giving the direction to the interim public works director and staff that we first do kind of a community-wide conversation about what particular uses, in part because we have a directive with our comprehensive plan that is giving us guidance as to how the public process should begin for this specific property. And so with that, are there any further comments or questions? Please come to the podium and give your name and address. Welcome.
Kirk Robinson. I'm a commissioner for the Bainbridge Island Metropolitan Park and Recreation District.
Welcome.
And I live on Timberline Place. I apologize for being late. I just sort of looked at the calendar, and it was supposed to be about 9:10, 9:15, if I saw things right. And so I apologize for coming in the midst of all of this. I know we've received a message from ABC with regard to the public process, and I just wanted to let you know what our thought had been on it and whether it jives with what you are planning to do. Or what your thoughts are, and that was to actually hold a joint public hearing with regard to the specific use of this as a dog park. And I don't know if that meets what you're intending to do, but that was the intent that the park district had with regard to this site.
And the council discussion has decided to for the city to first hold a meeting in a more broader conversation soliciting ideas as kind of the first step. And then depending upon the outcome of the discussion, it may certainly lead to a potential joint meeting.
Okay. We just, you know, we're hoping that, I mean, that a decision will be made on this proposal sooner rather than later. It's been out there for a year and a half, maybe longer. and it keeps getting sort of maybe restarted, and there's some reason why it shouldn't go forward, or change in personnel. All those kinds of things come up. We understand that, but given hopefully we have a little stability, we had a pretty good working group that I think came to a reasonable conclusion here, that had three of your members and two of our members, and hope that that's that means something in this deliberative process. So thank you.
Thank you, and certainly appreciate initiating the conversation. Councilmember Hytopoulos?
I mean, just for your benefit, just to summarize, I think where we went was that our primary responsibility is to the citizens through the comprehensive plan in a situation like this, and we have specific directive with regards to this parcel that we will ask the community to what sort of use they want for this. So three council persons and a few other members of the community aren't really able to supplant the input of the entire city. So we're going to go through a pretty short process, nothing elaborate. We're going to have we're talking about having one little open house here to bring in ideas, and then just without any promises or expectations, have sort of a ranking of ideas for the Public Works Director to run by the, start doing some of the preliminary work with the agencies and see what the limitations are. But I mean, everybody here assumes there's a very high chance this will ultimately go to a dog park since there's been so much support. But we want to step through these hoops because this is our primary responsibility.
I understand. All I'm encouraging is let's make it as quick a process, get the meeting scheduled sooner rather than later. And with regard to the letter from the Interim Public Works Director, my understanding that, you know, a lot of that stuff is currently ongoing or has been resolved in the past, or at least our understanding from previous city attorneys and so on, that some things that were raised are really not issues, and hopefully that list will get a lot shorter real quick. So
excellent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thanks for being here. So any further questions or comments? It looks like you have some direction.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item is item four, council excuse me. Oops. You're back again.
I'm back. I haven't left yet.
My apologies. The next item is actually Rockaway Beach Road Stabilization Project, and you have some new information for us. Welcome again.
Yes. This is the last one for me tonight, I think. this one, again, is a Rockaway Beach Project item, and unfortunately, it's another one of those that comes to you as a walk-on agenda item. This one does not require a decision by the council. Basically, there's a requirement in the Transportation Act of 1966 that if a project that uses federal funds is going to impact what's called a 4F property, and 4F properties are essentially public park type properties, if the project is going to impact that, then you have to let everybody know that that's the case. And in order for that to happen, you have to make a decision that the impact is de minimis. And so this is to let you know that we have done that, and to let you and the public know that the way that Pritchard Park is going to be impacted by the Rockaway Beach project is twofold. One, a portion of the parking lot is going to be used as the staging area for equipment and materials for the project. And two, in order to provide the contractor with as many alternatives as we can, to give them as much flexibility as we can for how they get the job done and how they get equipment and materials to the project site, we're allowing them to access the project site through the Pritchard Park. And so they'll have a small access roadway that they'll construct to the project site through a portion of the park. And then once the project is completed, they'll be responsible for removing all of that and restoring the area. So that's what this is about.
Thank you. Councilmember Ward?
John, may I assume that you're talking about the small landscaped area that's near the EPA site and the
yes.
parking lot that's near the EPA site.
Yes, that's
not correct. The other parking lot and not the beach part of
that,
the main
that,
beach
yes,
part
that's
of Pritchard
correct.
Park.
Right,
okay,
because yeah. so the areas you're talking about will not be impacted by the project.
Okay, so it's this small area near the EPA thing.
Right.
Okay, which is also near the Rockaway project. So.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or comments from the council? Seeing none, are there any comments or questions from the audience? No? Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank
that was quite
much.
quite a run. The next item is council discussion item 4, public outreach process for development applications. And we have our discussion leader is Councilmember Hytopoulos.
Yes, so it looks like I was remiss in following. I did follow up with the city manager and explain what I was, the larger issue that I explained two, 3 weeks ago that I would like to start discussing tonight. Mm-hmm. The public outreach process for development applications is just a piece. And as I said earlier, I'd really like to be able to discuss the larger issue of the role of the council versus the staff in development, in application of our code, in enforcement of our code, and where... You know, how's that going? How's enforcement going? How's application going? How is advisement of the council going with regards to policy changes we should make? We've had recent situations like the, obviously, and multiple times, the traffic study issues that are mm-hmm. rearing its head again. As an example of, as council members were feeling like something's not working, are we getting mm-hmm. enough information to make the decisions that, are there policy changes we can make? We also deal regularly with citizens being frustrated about once they see a development happening, they write to us en masse and say, don't vote for this, not understanding that we don't vote on it. We made policies earlier. They get executed. They may be working. They may not. But so one of my questions was just a check-in on the public outreach process for development applications relating to some changes that the previous council passed that from a subcommittee that Debbie and I were on with certain changes to try to get more, you know, bigger, more meetings, more notice, longer comment period on significant applications. And that's what I am assuming that that our planning director probably is ready to talk about coming up in the future. I really would like to talk about how we do enforcement. Whether we do cooperative compliance or whatever it's called, what that is that something we have to do? Would we like to have a different policy direction for the way we're doing enforcement and some other issues? And then, of course, whatever else you guys want to talk about. But really the big issue is we said as council members, like most local officials, dealing with citizens saying, do something about what's in front of us. And I think it's helpful to educate the public about what can we and cannot do. And it's also important for us to take an interest in is everything working to implement the community's vision? So I hope that makes sense. But and other than that, I guess that my request of the public, the planning director would be if you're prepared to just do a check-in at least on the issue of how we're doing with public process on development applications, the outreach process.
Yes, I am. Before I go over my presentation, and I think now that I have a better understanding of what you want to talk about, I may not go through every piece of it. But before I do that, one of the suggestions of our city manager is that we prepare a guest editorial for the paper, which I'm about halfway through, and I hope to have it done this week, about the review process, what types of things the city reviews for, who the reviewing authorities are, when the council gets involved, when the hearing examiner gets involved, what are the opportunities for public participation, how do we reach out to the community. And I agree with you, we often get comment letters to the city council, you know, vote no on this. And so one of the focuses in the editorial will be what is the council's role? And as you said, it's really setting the policy and the comprehensive plan and then adopting the development regulations, which under the Growth Management Act are intended to implement the vision and the comprehensive plan. So that's the first step. Now I'd like to go over a little bit about what we do in terms of public outreach, specifically how it's changed since the subcommittee that you served on and Councilmember Lester, and I think mm-hmm. it was Councilmember Hytopoulos, maybe? I don't mm-hmm. remember. Franz. All right, so I'm going to focus on the right-hand side of this because I think that's what you're most interested in, and that's what the public outreach is for development projects. So one of the things that the ad hoc committee recommended is that we have this, the icon is on the left, this proposed land use action page, which is on the very prominently displayed on the city's webpage. And what that is a listing of all of the currently active projects that the department is reviewing. So these are projects for which we have a complete application and it's in some process of review. It has a link to the notice of application, which includes a map and more description about what the project is. It tells you, are you in a comment period? Are you in an appeal period? What's the status of the project? This gets updated whenever we have new information, which is typically weekly and sometimes more than weekly. We have, we include, for example, if you look here, we include when there's a public participation meeting scheduled. We include if there is a hearing examiner proceeding scheduled. And then we include information such as when an application has been withdrawn or modified in some manner. These are posted as soon as we have a complete application. They are kept up until a project is approved, and then if the project is appealed, it's kept up until the appeal period is over. So this is something that is as a result of that subcommittee, and we also have a listserv that people can sign up to and get this same information. So that's one thing I wanted to share. On that same page, there's an interactive map that you can access and click on various properties. They're highlighted in yellow, and then if you zoom in on them, it tells you what the project application is. And I'm not going to be able to, for some reason, that link's not working, but if you go and use your own at home or on your computers, you'll see how it works. We use multiple listservs. This is a list of all the city's listservs. And people can sign up for these, and then the ones we typically administer, the Planning Commission, Land Use Action, we have a whole bunch of those. And those, we send out notices and any kind of information that we think people need to receive. We publish legal notices for all hearings, notice of application, and various, we follow the legal requirements, those are published in the review. We use display ads for the public participation meetings, for special events such as the Waterfront Park Project, for some of the Shoreline special events, Shoreline Update special events. And then we've also started using Facebook, and one of the things we're doing on Facebook is we are starting to use that to advertise the public participation meetings. Obviously, we post the property. I have samples of the signs. We have three different signs. We post them. They're three different colors. We have a very large sign that we post when a public participation meeting is scheduled. We have another sign that is posted once we have a complete application, and that the property is posted on any frontage that's facing the street. So if it's on a corner, you have to post both sides. And then we post the property again when there's a public hearing. Mailing is done for notices of complete application. We do mailings to anyone within 500 feet of the property. General departmental information, I'm not going to go through this, but we have a department page that includes general information, who to contact, what our big projects are. Our building division, under the guidance of our new building official, it's not so new anymore, but he's still making a lot of good changes, has developed a building division webpage. You can access the monthly reports with all the permit data. It tells you, gives you information on what codes the city uses, and then you can also access residential and commercial building permits. Then I think what is probably, So this is, I prepared this quickly for you, but this shows how we notice the various events in the life of a permit. So on the public participation meetings, which are required for most of our projects, We publish a display ad. We mail it to anyone within 500 feet. We mail it to anyone who sent in a comment. We post the property with a, notice it on the land use action page. It's noticed on the interactive map. We send it out to the various listservs. We post the property. We post it in the kiosks out here at City Hall, and then it's also on the city's calendar, and then, as I said, we've just started using Facebook. Design review board meetings are noticed through listserv and then also on the calendar. Once we have a notice of complete application and a SEPA notification, we use all of those techniques except the calendar and the Facebook. Notice of decision, that's where we actually have the decision on the permit. We mail to commenters. It's posted on the land use action page, on the interactive map, sent to listservs, and on the kiosk. Hearing examiner, you can see, is most of those tools. Planning commission, the legal notice for public hearings is posted. We mail to commenters. We put it on the land use action page. Send it to the Planning Commission listserv and the land use listserv, and then it's in the kiosk. And then council, which is a more limited land use, those are typically final subdivisions. We use, again, you can see the X's. So the main changes we've made since the subcommittee convened and made their recommendations is we do a much larger mailing radius. We do much more posting of the property, including distinctly different looking signs. We have the public participation meetings used to be voluntary. The committee recommended, and we've amended the code, so those are now mandatory for almost all projects, not for, obviously, single-family residences or some of the smaller projects. And then, of course, the land use action page. And I think the land use action page is pretty widely viewed.
Thank you. Councilmember Hytopoulos?
So I had a couple questions just based on some things that, you know, have come to my attention in the last year or so. But is there another meeting required for, and I'll just give the specific example, but was there a meeting when big changes happened, you know, the project that went dead above Linwood Center, the Linwood Center project?
So Linwood, the Linwood Center project.
The one, yes. I forget what it's called. It's called Pleasant Beach.
Pleasant,
what is it?
Yes.
Pleasant Village or whatever. Yeah.
So
Beach Village.
They probably predated the original project.
Right.
Probably predated the the required meeting process. Mm-hmm. Except I think
they
did it on a voluntary basis. I'm pretty sure they did.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Now they've come in for some modifications, mm-hmm. and we did do a public meeting for that. And one of the things I mentioned earlier is that more and more, maybe it wasn't at this meeting, but more and more we're starting to host those meetings, not necessarily always at City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
That one was done at Linwood Center.
So was that signed? Because I'm in the South Ward and I never saw the signs, and I heard from two people who live nearby they didn't. So was
it
that these
been,
signs,
so
the large signs were there?
It should have been, and I can check. I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay.
But yes,
and
there was a meeting on that.
So there would be. So if there was a substantial change in a project,
yes,
would be another meeting.
Yes.
And then another question is, I noticed Planning Commission, you're not currently doing Facebook, but it sounds like Facebook is really taking off with the waterfront. With the Visconti development, Planning Commission will be making some substantive decisions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I would ask that with a level of interest in that project in the community, that we consider all possible ways of letting people know when that's happening.
And we're in the very early stages of using Facebook.
Sure.
I think Waterfront Park might have been the first project. I'm not certain. And so we're open to those ideas.
Yeah.
One thing I want to be careful about is you need to treat all projects the same, and you don't want to single out certain projects for a different type of treatment than others. And so, we can think about it and the best way to do it, but I have concerns about distinguishing between a big project and another project, because any project could be big to the person who lives next door.
Well, could you go to the page where you showed your chart? Because I'm just curious. I think there was more than just Facebook that wasn't with Planning Commission. So mailing an interactive map and posting signs. So posting signs don't happen for the Planning Commission? for example, Visconti?
No, the only public meetings we post right now are the public participation meetings and any public hearings. So actually, will they be conducting a public hearing? No, as the hearing examiner does. So what that project that you've referred to will go to the hearing examiner, who will conduct a public hearing, and that will be signed.
The Planning Commission doesn't make any decisions, they only
make
recommendations.
The only decision they make is on noise variances.
And yet, that's where the public's heard, to make the record for the hearing examiner?
Yes, the Planning Commission has a public meeting, and then the hearing examiner has a public hearing.
So, I mean, I'm just thinking there's a problem to me, because the one place where the public could have an outpouring of comment is the Planning Commission meeting. So if only the hearing is noticed, does that have as much value to the community? I just think there's an example of, I'm wondering, when the community is looking and asking when are they going to be heard. So, I mean, I know we're talking, at the moment we're talking about a systemic thing and, you know, what the process is for all
right.
projects, but I guess I'm a little concerned about a project where that's the process and that's the hearing, because it never comes to the council, Visconti.
That's correct.
So that's the chance for the public to be heard. So I guess that would be my feedback on on that.
Councilmember Blossom?
So you mentioned that if there's a substantial change, and I'm sure you recall with what's now Pleasant Beach Village, one of the big issues with the Blakely Heights neighborhood was the buffer, the tree, you know, the tree buffer.
Mm-hmm.
And my recollection is that something that changed in the process.
I didn't know that.
I can't hear you. Sorry.
The buffer between the upper part of Pleasant Beach Village back, you know, with the original developer. And with Blakely Heights, that was a big issue, the buffer.
Yeah.
And my recollection is that changed after there'd been the public participation in the meetings, and that there were some neighbors that were calling because, you know, the plan we saw, there were supposed to be trees here, and they're gone. And they were, my recollection is they were told, well, we've already, you know, you've had your time to comment, your time to input, we made a change.
Well, that raises the question. So, with
Councilmember Hytopoulos.
Sorry, with the change in that project, was there a remailing of notifications?
I'm sorry. Which project?
I'm sorry. On the Pleasant Beach Village, is that right?
Yes.
Was there a mailing again for the meeting for the changes? Because the project died for like 3 years. So when it came back and there were changes made, was there a mailing to the 500
radius?
So not radius?
The most recent change with the swimming pool and the apartments. You're talking about before that.
Oh, see, no,
that's what I'm saying.
What
is a change? Because to the people in Blakely Heights, the buffer changing was a substantial change.
What I would say about that is that you're talking about the original meeting, and that was before this process went into place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm just using that as an example of something that to some people is a substantial change.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, my guess is that happens frequently, and that's another issue I think we should talk about. But the particular situation where the project died and basically a new project was created, I was very nervous about whether that was going to be treated like a new project.
And my memory is, and I'm sorry, it was a while ago, that when the project came back, I don't think we had the mandatory process in place, but I think they did a voluntary process. That was when it was on a voluntary basis for Pleasant Beach.
When it came back, it was after these changes.
Was it? Okay.
Yes. And so that's why, because I have actually family and neighbors, you know, I have people in the area who were saying when they read in the paper that, you know, now it's going to have a pool and now it's going to have apartments, they said,
I'm sorry, we didn't know. I'm missing. Okay, so there was the original project.
Right.
And then it went dormant.
Yes.
And then it was resurrected.
Right.
And at that point, I believe there was a voluntary meeting, but I can check. And then the most recent changes with the swimming pool and the apartments, yes, there was a mandatory meeting. And I'll have to check and make sure that the property was posted.
I would also be curious to just make sure that was also noticed through direct mailings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Councilmember Blossom?
So I can tell you that they did mailings for the pool and the new apartments, because I received one. And they did have a meeting at the Manor House.
Okay.
I don't recall seeing signs, but I wasn't looking. And I know at 1.2 they did a site plan amendment where they added basically the parking spaces that are on street at the intersection. And I don't think there was a meeting, but there was a notice sent to property owners that there was this revision being proposed.
Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Well, I have one more.
Councilmember Hightopoulos.
And I promise this was agenda item was not supposed to be for a question and answer about all the projects, because I think it's a bigger issue. But just real quick, on Visconti, is that done? Was that the meeting that was had months and months ago, was that the one mandatory meeting, or has that mandatory meeting not happened?
There has been a public participation meeting. They have a complete application in. They are tentatively scheduled to go to the Planning Commission on August 22nd, and then if they do go to the Planning Commission on August 22nd, they would then go to the hearing examiner probably sometime in September.
Okay, so that's very soon.
Okay.
So the press got that.
So the, having served on the committee that went through this process, I was curious in terms of the signage that we're using. It is larger. That was one of our requests.
I brought samples.
If you don't mind, just it will help the community members at home visually know what they need to be looking for.
So this is the sign that it's posted with for the public participation meetings. This
okay.
This is the biggest you could make in this.
Let's see. And if you could write the public meeting, it's kind of dangling.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you for the viewers at home. That's the
and then
green
on the right. Which side is this? This side here. There is a site plan posted.
So with the public meeting in the other space, and she wasn't able to talk in the microphone and hold things at the same time. There is a site plan notice and information
right.
About the project.
Yes, and so then. Once we have that public participation meeting, then once we have a complete application, the proposed land use action sign is posted. And then once we have a scheduled public hearing, say before the hearing examiner, the public hearing notice is posted, the hearing examiner. So there are three different colors, and the committee wanted this sign to be the biggest.
Thank you. And in that process, we were at one point, it was new to us, we hadn't really tested it out, were QR codes. And I see that the city manager, with his city manager's report, has a way that people can click on a QR note and get information about how to sign up or go to the report itself. I actually haven't used that. But a lot of people have smartphones now. And sometimes it's difficult to write down the project numbers. So that would be something, now that we have been test driving the QR codes, that we potentially think about putting in that space that has the printout of the site plan. Might be something to assist people. Okay. Any comments from the community? Please come forward. Welcome. If you could state your name and your address, and you'll have 3 minutes to comment.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm Gary Bonzon, and presently I live in Eagledale.
Okay.
I'm a property owner of 40 years on Tolo Road.
Okay.
And recently, in April, I became aware of a really out-of-scale, large development, unpermitted development that was happening on the property to the west. So basically, I feel like we can talk about the building process and the application mm-hmm. process, but without enforcement, the process means nothing. Because what I see happening here on the property to the west of me, is a development with multiple violations. Mm-hmm. And when I first saw it, I was amazed because, one, I looked for a permit and there was none. And the scale of the, well, here I can we set that on the screen? And I do have a couple letters and just a brief submittal and a website which is a SkyDrive website. You can go and access my photos of this wasabi farm. And so, at any rate, we can talk about the application process without aggressive enforcement. The laws really are meaningless, because people will do whatever they want and then try to get permits after the fact, and that's the case here. So, briefly, what my letter says is that I hope you will take the time to familiarize yourselves with this unpermitted industrial high-tech venture that has appeared on the property west of me. And imagine getting up in the morning and looking out on the neighboring property and seeing 150-foot, 350-foot long hoop buildings with glare and 2,000 yards of fill that was brought in. No SEPA checklist, no permits, nothing. And so please familiarize yourself with this project, and I hope the city acts aggressively to enforce the laws that are in place for this type of development. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
Should I?
And you can provide the information to our paralegal. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you.
Any further comments or questions? Councilmember Blossom?
I just want to point out, since we're talking about this, the traffic study issue, mm-hmm. because I feel like, I mean, it's come up with CAVE, with GROW, and it's always like, well, it's too late for that one, it's too late for that one, so it just keeps not getting done, and then another project comes, and we still haven't done anything. So when are we going to do something?
Councilmember Hytopoulos?
Was she gone? Didn't we put it coming up really soon? I mean, we put it like, didn't we? Is it not?
I don't know.
No, I think we've agreed to make it a major priority. And I think if you were here, we had a conversation about how we wanted to elevate it above all else, basically. So okay. I think
I can add a little.
Yeah.
Something. So that is on our work plan, and we were a little bit concerned because we've had some staffing changes and some new projects added, and I know that it was discussed at a council meeting. Our city manager followed up with me on making sure it got done this year and not deferred to another year's work plan. And so tomorrow, actually, I'm meeting with our interim city public works director, Chris Hammer, city engineer, and then the development engineer in our department who handles development review to map out how to go forward with an ordinance revising the traffic study requirements.
Okay.
Is this a third quarter item or is it a fourth quarter item?
City Manager Doug Schultz.
That's part of what they'll be mapping out, to how much time it's going to take to pull the information together. We can put the ordinance together, but a big piece of it is gathering information about future traffic needs, so you can establish your cost for the impacts. We're talking about the requirements. That's something different. Yeah. So, but they'll still be mapping out the process. We're almost starting we have started the third quarter, so to get that done in 2 months may be difficult, but we'll do what we can to move it forward.
Councilmember Ward?
Yeah, I for one would like to get briefed periodically on this revision of the traffic study thing. Before I see an ordinance, I'd like to know, have a comparison between what we have now, what's going to be fixed, how it's going to be fixed, what the impact's going to be. Because, all this process is wonderful, but if, all we're making sure is more people know about how flawed the traffic studies are.
Well, I actually think that's a really good idea, because we do know, the staff knows that you want changes, and perhaps changes in the methodology, a different number of different areas, but we're not completely sure of what direction you want to take. So maybe after
I think some interaction would be welcome.
So maybe after we have the staff meeting tomorrow, we can get some time before council and talk about, what recommendations we might have and how you feel about those.
Okay.
Thank you. Councilmember Hightopoulos?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to reiterate, I mean, it's possible Kathy also wasn't here at that meeting. I mean, I think we made a point of, certainly to the city manager, that, I mean, I'm willing to acknowledge an almost irrational desire to move this fast, just because, and recognizing, I appreciate we're pushing really hard, but it's because it's become sort of like a shining star in what's not working for the community on really critical projects. So I think we're just asking it to be as fast as possible in a little bit of a faster speed than would be normally reasonable to ask of you, just because, you know, if it takes 6 months, what's the next project that's going to come down during that 6 months? And we've had to look the community in the eye too many times feeling that we don't feel that it's working.
Okay. Mayor Bunkowski?
And along those lines, I suspect that council would be supportive of bringing in outside help through a consultant to get it done in a shorter period of time.
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. I suspect, you know, based on what I've seen, that a normal traffic study analysis for an island where the traffic is terrible for 10 minutes every hour is different. And one of the things that Councilmember Lesser and I saw when they were looking at the roundabout over in front of the casino is the analysis associated with ferry traffic is a very, very unique set of analysis. And even the DOT was having a hard time trying to figure out how to deal with that in its normal traffic mechanism. And when you listen to the complaints that we've had with respect to the Cave Avenue Grow, and now with this, it centers around the issue associated with ferry traffic that prevents an awful lot of other things from happening. And it's kind of, you can't just average that out, which I think is what's been going on. So,
Councilmember Hightopoulos?
Well, I think what we also need to understand is even when it's not the ferry traffic itself, which creates certain issues, but just, you know, what we need to be advised as to is is there a menu of choices with regards to how stringent a community can be? With regards to, you know, whether we declare an intersection a failure or whether we tolerate, what level of failure we tolerate, or whether we require multiple days of study, or, you know, are we doing it the only way it can be done? Are there more stringent ways to do it? Our community might have a lower appetite for, you know, the outcomes that a standard process might have. If there are other processes that are legally acceptable that will allow us a more stringent requirement for traffic, I think the council would want to be advised on that. So,
thank you. So there were several items that we heard about. You have a guest editorial coming up, and thank you for working on that. We heard Councilmember Hightopoulos desiring a future discussion regarding enforcement, and we had a comment from the community about that. And this last piece was the request to have a briefing on the traffic study issues sooner rather than later. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next item is an addition that was added to the agenda for council discussion is item B, discussion on easement, and that was put on by Mayor Bunkowski.
I move that we authorize the city manager to negotiate an easement that was discussed in executive session.
Second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. The next item is item 5, committee reports. Councilmember Ward.
I attended the CENCOM budget briefing and then subsequently the CENCOM budget approval meeting, and was pleased to see that in their 2014 budget they have $30,000 allocated to do a cell coverage evaluation of Bainbridge Island with the thought towards looking at placement locations for new towers that would eliminate some of the dead areas
on the island. So that's coming down the road, and I see that as a very positive thing. The other thing, when I happened to mention this to the new police chief, he mentioned that I'd like to see if there's a way that they could conceivably piggyback on that study and look at the dead zones and their radio coverage as well. So it's going to be different antennas, but it's maybe possible. So.
Thank you. Any other committee reports? Mayor Bunkowski?
The Councilmember Lester and I attended a transpoll meeting last Thursday, I believe, where we talked about the potential for a regional grant and the interim public works director discussed that. There was also a large discussion about a changing the funding cycle from 2 years to 4 years, and that's still in work. Subsequent to that, I had a meeting with the KRCC Executive Board, where I'm a member, with respect to along with the other mayors and the commissioner. And we talked about two things that were particularly pertinent to Bainbridge Island. One is the due structure. There's going to be a presentation of a proposed change to the due structure, and it has a good news, bad news story. Right now, our dues for KRCC amount to a little over $28,000 a year, which is higher than any of the other municipalities, and it's based on assessed property valuation. The analysis has been done, and trying to change the due structure so that it is more in proportion to how successful entities are in terms of achieving grants. You know, if you're not getting any money out of the grant, why are you putting all this money in the KRCC? So a proposal was made to reduce the fixed dues structure, which is what this was, from roughly $28,000 to a percentage of your general fund, where the general fund was viewed as a measure of a civic organization's ability to fund things, picking I think the number turned out to be 0.75%, which would then reduce the fixed portion of the Bainbridge Island down to $13,000 from $28,000. That's the good news. Bad news is Bainbridge Island, in the last go-around, was extraordinarily successful in getting grants, and the idea is now that the getting a grant, you would be charged 2.5% of the grant for funding KRCC. And what that does is substantially, because last go around, instead of getting, we've been getting $100,000 grants, last time we got over $1 million, and so all of a sudden we got almost $2 million with the grants. That increases our contribution substantially for 2013, reduces it for 2014. So it's a good news, bad news story.
Councilmember Hightopoulos.
So that's a proposal, or that was decided?
Proposal.
That was a proposal.
So, you know, just a little feedback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I felt when I was on KRCC for a couple of years was, you know, it's a great organization. It's really good that it exists. I want it to exist. But it often felt like, and we need to be there, but it often felt like we have a lot not in common with the county. And a lot of what the business is of KRCC addresses issues that don't wind up relating to us out here on our island. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, it's as though, I mean, the characterization I'm hearing is as though the entire purpose of KRCC is just to pull in grants for us, which is great. It's great that that's the conduit for the grants. But there's a lot more to the organization. It spends a lot of time doing a lot of other work that is, so I don't know where I'm going with this dangerously, but it's interesting. It's more than a grant funnel. It's an organization that does a lot of other things. So,
before you comment again, this is new information, and possibly we should have, before the next KRCC meeting, have it put on the agenda for council to have a deeper, fuller conversation about this. When is the next meeting?
I'm thinking it might be next week.
Oh, no.
That's the reason.
Okay.
I mean, that's what this originally came up. The
Mayor Brunkowski?
From what I've seen, a majority of the work that is currently done by KRCC funnels around the grants. It does land use in terms of those kinds of things, all of which then work into the amount of funding that comes to the county for grants. So that's the proposal, and if it's the will of council to not support that, I can certainly do that. But one of the things that it really represents is you can legally do this. That was part of the issue, is that that doing it this fashion is legal, and it doesn't represent effectively. It says that your funding is now. It costs you 2.5% more in terms of a match if you're successful. Mm-hmm. So,
Councilmember Hytopoulos.
Well, so I had two questions. One is this retroactive? So, I mean, next year's dues are calculated based on last year's.
It'll be it would be funding into 2014. So
based on this
based
past
on 2013,
year's.
Yeah.
And then the other question, just going back to the base calculation. Based on general fund, I'm just curious to know how that bears out. I mean, that's sort of a strange number, because one city could have a large general fund and have huge services that they must provide to a larger population,
that
and another
was,
with
was
a small.
That was the argument. Excuse me,
Mayor Punkowski.
That was the argument that Bremerton had, because their general fund is. $35 million, and so now their base is $26,000. The county's general fund is $81,000, so its base is $61,000 versus what it was in the past.
So why don't we pay based on
Councilmember Hytopoulos?
Why not pay based on per capita population or something that actually, you know, theoretically bears on how many people served by the organization? I'm assuming that would be, the outcome would be similarly unfair for other reasons. It makes more sense to me.
This information, I serve on this with Councilmember Ann Blair and Mayor Bunkowski. It's new information. I think we have until the end of the year to figure this formula out and make it right. So I do think that we should put this as an agenda item, so we can all have this information and have time to digest it, and possibly we could make the council members can make a better recommendation. Okay. I serve on Housing Kitsap Board, and tomorrow we will be hosting. I say we've invited Housing Kitsap and the Housing Resource Board to meet with the city manager to just begin a conversation about opportunities that possibly could be had with regards to both our housing development demonstration project ordinance and are there surplus properties that might be of interest to these two organizations? That meeting is going to happen tomorrow, and part of it, too, is to introduce city manager to the staff of both Housing Resource Board and the Housing Kitsap. So that's happening tomorrow. Thank you. Any other committee reports? Seeing none, now we have the city manager's report.
Okay, last week there was not a city manager's report due to vacation. This one of the things that came up in a recent discussion with council members, I just want to provide a brief update. We are making progress on a couple of the non-motorized trail easements along Sportsman Club Road, so that's something that hasn't really been on the radar of the council, but we are working on it, making real good progress. So hopefully by late October we can be well underway and bring something to the council.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions? Thank you. We no longer have community members here. So the next item is the review of upcoming council meeting agendas, and we have before us the special regular business meeting for Wednesday, July 24th. Are there any changes, additions? Councilmember Hytopoulos.
So I had a couple comments. So one was just, it seems like 10 minutes is sort of short for conversation on 7 and 8. Is that right?
No, definitely. We could add.
Some people
yes.
weren't. Some people weren't present even before that was.
No.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. And then the other was just. I'm just surprised that there's not. I wasn't here for the discussion that's happened so far on the Public Records Act issues. I thought it was going to come back here, but I'm looking forward and I'm seeing it's not going to be discussed until the 28th of August, even though we have pending requests to comply with. Why are we waiting another month past next? I mean, that's like, what, that's 6-7 weeks?
The request was for our city attorney to provide the presentation, and on the date that it was requested for, I believe August 7th or 8th, he's actually on August 7th, he's on vacation.
Okay.
And so that was the date that he proposed coming back on.
Are we okay with
city
regards to the pending request to wait that long?
I think that's a separate, but go ahead, city manager, Doug Schultz.
Yeah, we're fine with the notification. We can explain a reason why as long as we're working toward it, I think we're fine. The other issue with scheduling, the city attorney and I have talked about it. He is proposing bringing in some other individuals who have expertise with this subject matter, State Archivist's Office, for example, because this issue is a little more complicated than just the public records request. There's also a records retention piece of it that plays into this. So that's another reason for the delay in getting this on the agenda.
Okay. Councilmember Hytopoulos.
And is it going to address the OPMA too? Yes. The discussion will also address the OPMA. It looks like it does here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks.
Any other items for the July 24th? It looks like we're increasing time on item 7 and also increasing. Was there another area you wish for an increase?
8B.
Yeah.
8B?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next is looking forward to let the community know on we will not be holding a council meeting on the 5th Wednesday, July 31st, but there will be a Department of Ecology SMP public hearing. It's an open house here at City Hall. It starts at 6 p.m. for the open house, and then following that will be a public hearing at 7 p.m. Again, that's Wednesday, July 31st. Looking at August 7th, we had a couple items, enforcement policy direction. Did you have a place where you were looking to have that further? Would that be a study session? I'm looking at Councilmember Hytopoulos.
Yes.
So would that be... So if you could check with the planning director and see if that, if you could coordinate and see if the 7th is a time frame, is that too soon?
Well, I mean, can we ask, can the city manager check with that?
Oh, okay. So would you check to see if we can have the kind of a second part on the public process be on enforcement, if that would work for the planning director's time frame? Mayor Bunkowski?
Going back to the agenda on the 24th.
Okay.
In the city manager's report, there were a number of other motions and discussions that occurred on the water in terms of accelerating the water plan, use of allocations and what some of those options are, and a water rate study. So if you could just status those on the 24th in terms of where we are on those. Yeah. Don't need a presentation, just a status that this is where we think we're going with those.
Okay. Councilmember Hytopoulos?
So I want to check in again on the Pendleton report. I mean, I just checked my calendar, and it was the 28th of February that I met with him. So it's been almost 5 months.
I have a meeting with him tomorrow to review his draft. We've had one review of kind of the outline of his draft, and now this is the review of his draft, and I don't anticipate there's going to be many changes to the draft, if any. So it should be ready to go real shortly.
So how will that come out to the community?
I am actually anticipating that we'd like to have Dr. Pendleton come over and give the presentation to the council.
Okay.
So for a study session or actually a busy business meeting? Or whenever it's...
Yeah, it's going to be a matter of working with his schedule.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Any others? Okay. The next item is the good of the order, and I have some presentations, but are there other good of the order from city council members? Okay. The first item, I wanted to let people know about the Frog Hopper Weekend Bus. This summer marks the rollout of a new type of transportation for Bainbridge Island. The Frog Hopper bus service is run by the Bainbridge Island Chamber of Commerce with a financial support from the City of Bainbridge Island Lodging Tax Fund and numerous community sponsors and advertisers. If you could click to the next slide. This new Island Weekend bus service has a 7-day all-day fare and goes to such island sites as the Blodell Reserve, Japanese American Exclusion Memorial, Fay Bainbridge Park, and Frog Rock. And the service starts from the ferry terminal, and a full list of stops and more information can be found at bainbridgechamber.com/froghopper. You can show a few other slides just so people can recognize what the buses look like. And then the next item is the Tour de Coupe. That will be Saturday, July 20th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. The cost individual by bike is $8, individual by auto is $10, and for people carpooling is $30. And this is a self-guided tour of island chicken coops, and all the proceeds will benefit Helpline House. Tickets are available at Bay Hay and Feed and Dana's Show House. And there's a couple of items, actually, I missed. We have our Bainbridge Island Farmers Market, Saturdays, 9 to 1 p.m. It's at Town Square City Hall. This Saturday, there's also a styrofoam recycling, and that's from 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., and then again on Sunday, July 21st, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and this will be at Bay Hay and Feed. The acceptable styrofoam items are those, the kind that can break, and they must be clean, dry, white, and free of labels and tape. No peanuts. You can recycle the peanuts at the UPS store. And Sunday, there's the Linwood Community Market, and that occurs from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Linwood Commons parking lot, and that features local produce and crafts. And we have a next slide. Yes, sir.
And last week there was even a free goat available there. So.
A free goat?
Yes.
Okay. You didn't take that, did you, City Manager? His space, his condo might be too small. And finally, on Monday, July 22nd, 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. at Paulsbo City Hall, there's a free and open to the public meeting. It's Police Response to Mental Illness, New Developments in the Field. This will be hosted by the Paulsbo Police Department and Islanders for Collaborative Policing. And law enforcement agencies across Kitsap are reassessing their approach to mental health and what can be done to improve interactions between first responders and those with behavioral problems. And coming over from the Kitsap County, we have Captain Scott Strathy of King County Sheriff's Office, David Hackett of King County Prosecutor's Office, and they will basically be giving information on King County's approach, which is called RADAR, which is Risk Awareness, De-escalation, and Referral. And basically they will be discussing this model and looking at how it might be used in Kitsap County. And I understand our Chief Matthew Hamner will be present, as well as many officers from Kitsap County. And that is all. With that, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you.